And welcome back. Margaret B. here, Bicycle Indiana. Really excited about this episode. I hope everyone enjoys it as much as I did talking to this gentleman. I've been really wanting to talk to Dylan Curtis from Apex Cycling for a long time, just to talk about his team as well as what he's creating for these racers. And it's something really special, I think, for the Midwest, but also for the state of Indiana, to use as an example of how you can create a very supportive team that is focused on sportsmanship and camaraderie and just really mentoring and empowering each other. So this is our eighth episode, I believe, eighth or ninth, and it's talking about Apex Cycling, which was originally out of the Warsaw area, and now kind of has a big presence in the Indianapolis area for specifically road racing and criterium racing. But we'll talk about the ins and the outs of how to manage a cycling team and race, so I hope you enjoy. Afternoon. We have another episode of our Life Behind Bars, Bicycle Indiana podcast, and I've got a great human being on the call today who I have known for, I would say, maybe two, three years. But I've got Dylan Curtis on the call today to talk about his awesome cycling team, Apex Cycling. But I'm really excited to talk about the ins and the outs of, one, starting a team, but also managing a big group of adults racing bikes. So let's introduce Dylan, and Dylan, take it away and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Margaret. Dylan Curtis, I guess you can tag on the founder and team director of Apex Cycling Team. So been at this now for this finishing out our fourth season now as a team. As a based out of Indiana, kind of the, I guess the home city kind of travels with me per se, but for the most part based out of Indianapolis, Criterium Cycling Team, and ranging from development riders, from three, four, five women to our domestic elite P12 men and women's team.
Okay. So I'm going to dive in first off, just a little bit about the history and kind of how you started. And first of all, welcome. I mean, I've been wanting to have this discussion with you for a really long time. I just know our schedules haven't really matched because we're both really busy people, which is good, right? But yeah, tell me the history of how you decided to start this team.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the people who've been around the Indiana cycling team, cycling scene, I should say, we're really familiar with an organization called NeighborLink and Team NeighborLink. And we did a lot of cyclocross, and I was a part of that for, I want to say, 5 or 6 years, I think.
I love the jerseys you had. They were awesome.
Yes, those, I still have some jerseys, actually. One of the coveted pink jerseys
that I begged
Andrew Hoffman to do. So got to keep that in the closet and bust it out on special days.
Definitely.
There I had started to kind of gather a group of friends together and race criteriums, but there was only 5 or 6 of us, and over a couple of years there became more, and we got to a place where I realized, you know, we had about 30 people on paper that said that they wanted to race, but in all reality, we had about 5 to 8 of us that consistently raced. And I realized, like, my desire was really not so much centered on myself and chasing results anymore, but it was more so I was really finding the fulfillment and enjoyment of running a cycling team. So I decided to start my own team in the fall of 2019. That would be solely focused on criterium racing and creating a team that we could take to the top level of US racing at that point in time, USA Crits, now American Crit Cup. But there were some things that I took from NeighborLink that I really, really enjoyed, and values that I just had that were pillars we wanted to stand on top of. So it wouldn't just be picking up some riders that could race at the top level. It would be starting with 4s and 5s, the group that we had, and just building from 4, from 5 to 4 to 3, and now to 1s and 2s.
Sure.
So that's really how we got started.
It was just a passion that you just wanted to take to the next step. So for our new listeners to Criterium Races, let's first back up. What is Criterium Racing? What is it? What's crit racing?
Yeah. So if you're into cycling and you've scrolled around, you've probably seen notorious videos of people sliding across asphalt doing all the things you're told not to do in a group ride. I always say Criterium Racing is like NASCAR for bicycles, right?
It is. It really is.
Some people, you know, I'm a motorsports fan, and like some of us are like, oh, I want to be more refined. We're the Formula One. Like, no, we are the NASCAR. Like, nobody's really making too much money. There are people who are, but the majority of us are not making tons or even making money. And it is all about who crosses the line first across these categories on anywhere from a half mile to up to almost like a 3 mile circuit.
Wow.
Where strategy of teammates and when to use your energy and when to draft and when to help others all comes together to just be first across the line. And as much as it looks like an individual sport, it is a huge team driven sport.
Sure. It's like a game of chess where you have to place people with their skills and their different, you know, tactics to figure out what the best play is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's really like a progression. It works in a system of category 5 being your entry level rider to a 1, which is like your pro rider. Mm-hmm. And in some of those categories, there's small leaps, but there's some really big transitions in there that really, you know, we always say when you first start, nowadays, everybody has access to like Zwift or coaches or training peaks, and you can utilize those systems to be really strong. But people start to find out as they move up, okay, it's not only just about how strong I am. Now it's how do I have to be so smart, like a game of chess.
Right.
When do I use that energy? When don't I? Do I have friends out here? Or am I the lone fish in the sea that's got to like figure this out?
Well, on top of it, too, you have to obviously be around a bunch of people going really fast. Some people that know how to ride, some people that don't. And then you get the newbies that are just hanging on for dear life, and it's chaos and crashes happen. It's a dangerous sport.
Yeah, it's I always say, like, we have to be a certain level of adrenaline junkie, because there is a certain thrill that even as I've removed myself from racing, that I still like eat up just watching footage of races. Or like the one time I go out and like decide to like make it halfway through a race, like it's like I could care less about, you know, sitting on the front and making it a fast race. I'm like, I'm in for the like ripping a corner next to somebody and being like, this is awesome. Like the adrenaline that comes from a lot of the danger of it, but also just the thrill.
Right. Now, do crit courses have to be, you said, a certain type of mileage, but are there certain things that crit courses are known for, like a hill? I know there's one called Crybaby Hill over in Tulsa, but are in the state of Indiana, we obviously have our races, but what are some of the big races that your teams have gone to?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I would be remiss if I just jumped to the big leagues and said, you know, we have some really special races in our area of Indiana, even into Ohio and up in Chicago. But Indiana, Momentum Indy is like the biggest race for Indiana, right? It's where the American Crit Cup, which is a national series, comes to for those races. And then my dear to my heart, Fat and Skinny Tire Festival.
Definitely.
3 days of bicycle racing, which is unique because it's all kinds of racing, which I love, from the road bike to the mountain bike to BMX, to kids events. But those are probably the two hallmark, you know, events, and they're honestly really just known for really fast courses.
Definitely.
They're Indiana, corn raised, bread, like flat. They are all about position and just keeping it fast. Mass Ave is like the unique one at Momentum Indy that, of course, plays to a position game of bike handling with its two triangles, you know, that you put together. So some tight corners, but really Indiana, I feel like it's known for just fast races.
Definitely. So we kind of talked about a little bit where the team is kind of based out of. Are all of your riders out of Indianapolis, or do you have a wide range of riders that are all across the state? I know originally it was Warsaw, but all of your team, is it, where is it all located?
Yeah, it's really a wide umbrella, relatively speaking, for our region. So we are, I'm in Fort Wayne, Indiana, so up in northeast side of Indiana. So Fort Wayne, Warsaw, we still have some riders. So that kind of covers the northern part of representation of the team. But a lot of the team, majority is Indianapolis, with a few outliers being Tiffin, Ohio.
Okay.
It's kind of a pretty small town. Cincinnati, and then Louisville.
Okay. Wow. And so Bloomington, big range. Big range of riders, which is great because you pull from different parts of the state and have great representation on a great team. So, and again, your mission is to obviously develop riders, bring riders into and to mentor riders. And that's something I want to touch on in a little bit about how some of your elite riders are mentoring, you know, the newer riders. But again, what are your main goals? I mean, for this team to kind of touch, you know, to dig deep into this conversation.
Yeah, I think before this year, I would have told you exactly what we've been doing is working towards those goals. We've seen success in riders moving up through categories within our team. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of prided myself on the fact we haven't really had more than a handful of riders leave the program and go to other teams. It's either been taking steps away from racing or setting racing aside. So we've seen a lot of progression in that way. And while we always wanted to get to the top, you have to like be successful at the local level first and understand that. So goals for us, you know, this year it was show up and show people that we're here and we mean business.
Yeah. I've seen it at the races. Apex just showing up in this swarm.
Yeah. I don't like to use the D word. I don't like to use the dominate word because I don't really truly believe in domination, because even at the top level of any sport, like those athletes will tell you they're constantly learning something new, even when they're winning. So for us, I mean, a lot of it's been refining and just growing our teamwork. You know, the women over the last 2 years had been incredibly successful and seen a lot of victories. And this year, I would say we probably have the strongest roster that we've ever had for our women's team, but it's been a lot of development and learning and getting to know one another as we have so many new people working together. And something going into next year that's a huge goal for us as we kind of change a little bit of the layout of how our team functions. And then for our men's program, it's been about winning as much as possible at the local level, but doing that in a way that we're taking our category one guys, our guys that are very experienced, like a Hogan Sills or a Spencer Miller, or, you know, a Will Coleman, whose race craft is just absolutely phenomenal, and taking the assets and resources that those guys have and seeing guys like our Cat 2 riders, like Derek Dotlich and Sam Aiken, for example, who have absolutely had breakout seasons where they've been able to taste success and getting wins. And seeing what it means to like truly see teamwork come together in a way that, you know, Rob Ayler is a prime example of that out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that we can stand at the top step out at a truly national event like Tulsa Tough and know that, you know, next year we're coming back even more hungry in the pro race. So,
well, and I think a lot of riders don't have that mentorship and they need to learn, because everyone has to learn. I mean, here in Terre Haute with group rides, people get so squashed when they get dropped on a ride. And it's like everyone has to realize people have to learn. And if you don't have the regrouping or you don't teach them how to draft or ride safely in a group, then they're not going to learn. And I think you're really doing that. That was a thing I wrote down as you were talking, any of the big podiums. And I do remember a buddy texted me about Hogan's win at Tulsa, which Tulsa Tough, if everyone's listening, is a huge race out in Tulsa. And it was a big win for your team. Do you want to talk about that or any of the other big wins that you've had with Apex?
Yeah, I would love to talk about them.
You need to brag right now because the state of Indiana needs to know.
I mean, you know, this year, so I definitely would say Tulsa was a unique one. We saw a lot of success this year at local races. With the likes of like Hogan Sills and Rob Ayler. Tulsa was something different from the very get-go of starting this team. I have always stood beside, we will not go to Tulsa until we can go and make a statement. Mm-hmm. And so when this team, this squad was put together and we saw the roster that we had and we knew like this was going to, we were going to be capable of producing results, Tulsa was at the top of the list. We knew we could go out and race the 1-2 race and try and find some success with, I mean, us coming across the line in first. So I tell people, if you haven't been to Tulsa Tough, put it on your bucket list, put it down on your calendar for next year, the following year, as soon as you can get out there. This is the Super Bowl of Criterium Racing. If there is a race that in any category you want to stand on the top step of any day of the three, that's the race to do it. And we were able to do it 2 of 3 days in the 1-2 men's race. And
that's huge. That's huge on such a big level, right? Mm-hmm. Well, and also Tulsa Tough, I know, is known for its spectator, you know, part of it and being there, not that you have to race, but they also have other things kind of like Indy Momentum where you can do things that are not racing specific and still be part of the party.
Yeah, they're one of the things I found out this year I had not known because I hadn't been out to Tulsa until this year. The Divas program that that's going on here in Indiana and especially in Indianapolis. I know you jump in and take part in that. Bree Clark,
And Jennifer
Savar have been huge in bringing women together in that cycling community and not so focused on just racing. It's more about riding and building community and just fellowship through cycling, which I'm like, sometimes I'm a little jealous. I'm like, man, like I want to go hang out with y'all. Like y'all look like you're having a blast. Like that's what I'm about. But they have that out in Tulsa. So that was really neat to see. And then even see some of the Divas riders. We're like riding, the guys are riding around out there and I'm walking around. I'm like, that's a Divas kit. I'm like, wait a second, what? And I talked to their race director and he's like, yeah, like we do this out here as well. And we're trying to get people to come to each other's event. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that just brings a smile to my face when it's like a bike race in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yes, it's like the Super Bowl of racing, of Criterium Racing, but like you truly have like fans of just cycling, driving, you know, 9 hours.
Right.
Just go ride their bike and then watch some bike racing. So,
well, Bree Clark was trying to strap me to the top of her car, trying to get me to go out there, but it just didn't work. It was something, I don't remember what I had going on that week, but I just couldn't make it out there. But it's on the list. It's on the bucket list to go out to. But speaking of women, I will say that you have created a great, you know, sense of camaraderie and sportsmanship with your women. I've raced a couple of them. And the level of Margaret, which is not the level that they're normally racing at, but they were just so sweet. They were just so sweet and encouraging. And even though like I was nervous and I was scared because I don't do this type of racing, I really appreciated their smiles. And at the end, like interacting with me and giving me a high five and making uncomfortable jokes with me because I was so, you know, nervous. But I do appreciate what you've done with the women's part of it, because I think cycling is intimidating and these women that you have are really doing a great job at representing the sport. So kudos to you.
Yeah. I mean, kudos to them. I honestly, when we started the team, there were no women on the team at first. And then the second year, that opportunity opened up. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And it was a couple of little 500 riders from IU. And then that's just grown year on year. And the culture that we have as a team, really, I've always been very like, we need to be approachable on race day. The pillars of our team are growth, opportunity, and community. And that community aspect does not stop on the group ride. That means on the race weekend, being able to have a conversation with someone, being able to, you know, crack jokes, have fun with people. Yes, there's still the competitive side. We still
absolutely want to win.
But the reality of realizing, like, you are not a threat to me in the way that if I'm friends with you, I can't beat you on race day, or I can't race you 100%. Absolutely, you can. That's a respect that we have for one another as competitors. But these, all of the women have just been incredibly easy to work with and fun to work with, and to a point where, like, I just want nothing more than to see them succeed. And a person who does not get enough credit for that, early on when we started the team, Chris Anderson, who currently rides for Sustainable, was a huge part of starting that. And found the first women to bring to the team. And when he moved on, Elle Marley kind of took over the reins of, like, starting to kind of oversee that. And granted, I kind of slowly pushed that on her more and more, like, hey, I want you to, like, really own this. Through, you know, she's been through a lot of injury and recovery to come back to racing.
I remember that last year. That was a really big crash.
Really big, really scary crash. And she's been nothing but resilient. And we've been absolutely blessed to have her, because her leadership and her calm nature and just desire to see as a team us thrive has been huge to that women's program. Oh, absolutely. To where the reality is, I can't manage all of these riders.
No, you can't. And I'm glad you're saying that. You can't do it all. You think you can, but trust me, I've been there.
I always say, I heard this a long time ago, and I really, really love it. The best leaders are not the people who just tell people what to do, but they find the leaders within an organization and equip them. And that's really what I've tried to do with this program, to see it succeed. Because, I have, well, not currently, I have a job, you know, I have a life, I have a relationship, you know, I have other things that I also have to pour into and give attention to. Sure. So while this is a huge part of my life, I have to find other people who also align with the same values. And she's been a huge part of that.
Well, it shows in your team and your women. And I love that you have women empowering women. I have a women's team too, and it's not at the level I think yours is at, but it's about a lot of women who just are dabbling in racing, maybe just want to have a group, but they have, you know, some expectations. And I kind of joke, we're a bunch of middle-aged women going through hormonal changes and just trying to have fun on bikes. But I love watching your team grow, and I think it's amazing what you're doing. So, okay, we're going to dive into some more questions here.
All right.
So different disciplines. I wrote down a bunch because I have seen those Apex kits at so many different events. Obviously, crit racing, we've talked about. I've seen those Apex jerseys at gravel events at Dust Bowl recently, as well as possibly maybe cyclocross. I just put that on there. But let's talk about the different types of races that your riders have been at. I mean, not just criteriums.
Yeah, you're trying to get me in trouble with the cyclocross folks here. Every time I see friends from Team Neighborling
cyclocross, they're
like, "Are we gonna get Apex jerseys out here? And I'm pretty sure we've actually got a handful of riders that are gonna do cross this year.
Nice.
And it won't be like an organized team thing. We won't have, you know, tents set up and everything like we do at a crit race. But I am excited for them to do that. That was some of the most fun race days that I ever had on a cyclocross course. And really what the OVCX is doing in the cyclocross community in Ohio and Indiana and Louisville, huge shout out to people down there, bringing a lot of revival back for that. It's just amazing. And if we can get back to, you know, cyclocross of 2014 to 2018, that would be huge.
That's when I started.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I have so many good memories of OVCX.
Good memories. So for our listeners, cyclocross is basically like a Criterium, but on grass and mud. And it's usually kind of in the colder months, and it's usually miserable outside, and you're gassed and you're just having fun on grass. But OVCX, so do you want to tell our listeners what OVCX is? Because I just wrote that down to contact David Palmer. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, and take it with a grain of salt here, because I admittedly have been removed from the cyclocross scene for quite some time.
Yeah.
Since probably about 2019, honestly. But cyclocross with the OVCX is Ohio Valley Cyclocross, and kind of ranges from Indianapolis to Louisville to Cincinnati up to Dayton, Yellow Springs, Ohio. And amazing race promoters that just want to create an environment where everywhere from kids, shout out Midwest Devo, like program is amazing. And the amount of kids that have come through that, all the way up to masters racers who are just out there having fun, slinging mud,
picking up their bikes and running.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I miss it. Sometimes I miss it. And then I'm like,
do you want to clean your bike off?
Back.
Right.
Right. I don't know, but no, OVCX is a really special thing. And I think at one point in time, it was honestly, OVCX was like the third largest, I think, attended cyclocross like calendar in the U.S. And from, I think just the other day, I saw that I think Purdue is hosting
a race. So, yeah.
I saw that too. And I know that was not around when I was racing. So really awesome to see. And I just think of like so many names like the Steerwalts and the Hermans and the everybody at Marion that puts on, you know, those races. It's pretty neat to see.
Well, I always have talked on our previous podcast for people that go to races that the event side and the production side is something that a lot of people don't realize how much goes on.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of dedication and passion and time. And David Palmer, if you are listening, get ready. I'm going to email you because I want to talk about OVCX, right? Yeah, those are some of my first races, as well as IndyCross that Matt used to put on, but he kind of stepped out. Maybe I should email him and bug him a little bit. But anyway, you obviously are going to maybe dabble in cyclocross, which is really cool. But I saw Apex Riders at Dust Bowl. What were they doing out there? I thought they were crit racers.
Yeah, so, you know, the spirit of gravel has taken over, and we always joke it is kind of an ongoing joke with some of us of my fellow staff people. We're like, yeah, people are like, oh, we miss road races. And we're like, there's still road races. It's called gravel racing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's, I mean, that's really what's happened. The lack of road races has been made up for in gravel racing. And it's an opportunity to not only be a part of a fun culture of riding that's super prominent right now,
right,
but to really push yourself, you know, and we've got some, you know, riders over the years, as well as like going forward, that have always kind of dabbled in that gravel. Brian Sullivan, who was part of our men's 3-4 program last year and intermittently this year, Rem Yoder, who rides with both of those guys are up by Goshen, and there's a Pumpkin Vine cyclery team up there. So really my main ask is typically, hey, here's our outline calendar. Here's our big events. And outside of that, you know, just come to me and ask, or we'll find out, you know, if roster spots, what we can work with, and keep the door open for people, to continue jumping into other races that they like, because I found out pretty early on, if you stick to one kind of cycling and one kind of cycling only, and you don't have a healthy balance, it can really take away from the sport and burn you out. So I think it's good for bike handling skills, and it's great for just keeping that portfolio deep and wide ranging.
Well, I remember last year, I'm pretty sure Spencer Miller won Dust Bowl, right?
He
And I was
did, yes.
blown away by his time. I think he averaged like over 22, like into 23 miles an hour for 100 miles. And the Vegan Cyclist came out this year, and his race review or, recap was basically he said it was a road crit on gravel for 95 miles. And he said he had never raced a gravel race at threshold for that long. And I was thinking in my head, like, Spencer Miller, who's on your team, won it last year. And it's just insane how fast those elite riders were going,
Yeah, I'm curious actually to know how Dust Bowl went this year. I obviously know the results, but I haven't gotten to talk to a lot of our riders that had
So
been there.
the downhill sketchy bridge that I crashed on last year, but the Vegan Cyclist has video, and that's actually where is it Drew that won it? He broke away because people slid out, and then it created a gap and whatnot. But yeah, it was a neat thing to. I mean, I held onto the front group for about like 5 minutes, and then I was
There we go.
across the back and just hanging on for dear life. But no, that is the spirit of gravel. Anything can happen, and you can have, your strongest riders out there, and mechanicals can happen. Or if you slide out on a sketchy downhill, it happens, right? So my next
Yes.
question is how do you pick, and I know you kind of mentioned this to me, how do you pick the which riders go to which races? Because I know that's something that's really important, and it's like certain riders are good at certain things. And I know I remember you mentioning like certain people went to Tulsa, for example. So how do you decide which riders go to which races?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we sit down in March. And we go to a team camp almost every year. I shouldn't say almost every year. We go to team camp down in Slade, Kentucky, and we just take the time to really look over as a team and per category. They kind of go over like what are people's strengths and weaknesses, and the team captains and myself typically kind of discuss that or. A spread like this year, spreadsheets made where it's like, who all wants to go to what races? What races are you available for? And then especially, we don't have to worry about roster lineup so much, except for our men's 1-2 program. So that was simply, you have to hit the button of, okay, who is probably best suited for this course? Who's the most consistent? And then who's available? And sometimes you're left being like, hey, I've got six slots to fill and I've got six riders. People probably noticed this year there were times where at some of the smaller races where there's not restrictions, we would have 8 to 9 riders. At Fat and Skinny, it was a prime example. The first night, we actually had, I believe it was 7 riders. And then there was like 3 team riders that actually just wore blackout kits. And we gave them the opportunity. They said, hey, we really want to race. Completely understand, just communicate that. And you can, just don't wear team kit and go out there and still race. But we try to do it in such a way that if we're going to national events, we've got a squad
Good
there.
squad.
And then that's like kind of the, I don't like to use the A squad because there are some really strong people that maybe can't go. And then those people lead the second squad, case in point, Elmhurst up in Chicago this year, where all of our women and our 1-2 men were split. They went there, and then the rest of us were out at Tulsa. So, and
I
all
think I
racing
remember
kind of the
seeing that,
same weekend.
yeah, lots of racing. So if somebody were wanting to be part of Apex and they're like, hey, you know what, I've dabbled in crit racing, I'm a five or I'm a four, or maybe you're a three, how do they get involved? What's the process, as well as what are the requirements and the expectations for riders?
Yeah, absolutely. So, things have really changed this at coming to close at the end of this season. So, going forward, we have always been a men and women's program that has facilitated riders from the category 5 all the way to the category 1, and then this year it was 3-4 men with all other categories included. going forward, we actually will no longer be facilitating a men's development program. So we will just have our domestic elite category 1 and 2 rider squad for men. And then on the women's side, we'll be offering, reaching out to riders as well as having open slots from riders ranging from brand new cyclists that are Cat 5 that have done a couple of races to our, domestic elite women's team that are category 1 and 2 riders. Mm-hmm. What we really look for in riders is to see people who are consistently showing up. And yeah. They're putting in the work to not only be competitive, but just consistently be out there racing.
Yeah.
There's plenty of racers that are very strong, but they race 3 times a year. Mm-hmm. And one of the requirements we have as a team is we kind of have a minimum race requirement, mm-hmm. and that changes per category. But it was really nice that this year was one of the first years we didn't really have any issues with that with our categories that we're carrying forward with. So showing that those riders are committed to that, it's not required that you have a coach, but we ask for coaching transparency. So if you coach yourself, that you share with us, hey, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Whether, we can see if it's working or maybe if you need a little bit of help and guidance with that. There's riders within the team or friends of the team. A lot of the riders utilize Drew Dillman's, Dylan Johnson's Ignition coaching. Mm-hmm. So we can point people in that direction, if not within the team already. And then a huge part is, it falls back onto the culture of the team. You have to be somebody who is willing, to let some of those walls down and be approachable on race days. Mm-hmm. I have to say I've noticed more racers by how they carry themselves than the results on paper. Sure. Yes, the results are great, but sometimes there's riders that, they're not on a team and they constantly finish in the top 10. And, that can be a really frustrating thing. But when you see that they continually show back up, inevitably, I end up having conversations with them, and that leads one thing to another and see what they want out of it, and hopefully welcome them into a home if they're on board for, just wanting to jump in and continue to develop and grow in a team atmosphere.
Sure. So this is a perfect transition because I know you and I have talked about this because I needed your advice and just how to handle difficult situations. Obviously, some people just don't want to play in the same sandbox. But, there are people that, like you said, open transparency in their training and just, being part of a team and camaraderie. Obviously, there's going to be difficult situations as a team manager and somebody who runs, this program. How do you deal with being vague? Obviously, how do you deal with those difficult situations and those people that maybe that don't always agree, with each other?
Yeah. Kick and scream.
To our listeners, that is the answer to everything. Kick and scream.
Throw their toys out of your sandbox. Yeah, right. Obviously it's sport, right? Like, this is inevitable. I don't care if you have the best team culture or the most toxic team culture, it happens.
Yeah.
There are times when people are not on the same page. Typically what we try to do is address that, early on and, raise concerns or show hey, this is what's going on. This is how it does not align. I really would like to see an improvement in these ways. Or I've asked this of you, or it is expected of you in this way. And after 2 or 3 times, the blessing that I really have is I don't do this on my own, right? I was talking about Elle earlier. Our staff for years from the very start, I had Rem Yoder as a part of the staff that we have. Luke Cobfelt, who runs a shop, Alley Cat Outfitters in Wabash, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, we've had the team captains. So now we have, Will Coleman and Hogan Sills and Caitlin Madsen are all team captains. And it's really just, specific to each case, talking with those captains and deciding, hey, what is the best course of action if we're really not seeing improvement? Is this something where we have to say, you know, this really isn't working out, we need to go our separate ways?
Right.
Or if it's something that, you know, we can get over this, it's not a big deal. We've had situations where, you know, there's, you know, walk your own separate ways and right. not much said after that. We've also had situations of like, you know, hey, we're going to go our own separate ways, but then there's still a mutual respect because it blossoms, it's like, this is what you wanted. This is what we wanted. Right. We didn't align, and that's okay that we didn't align.
Right.
I still want the best for you. And, you know, I personally hope you want the best for us, but you know, if you don't, that's no love lost. I'm not going to lose sleep at night over that. I want you to be true to who you are, and I'm going to continue to be true to who I am. That's, you know, it's how the team has gotten where it has.
Definitely. And it also takes kind of the pressure off of you to have these team captains to talk to people, especially because it's rider to rider. Not saying that you're not a rider, but it's team rider to team rider. And then, you know, like I said, it takes it off of you, which I think is a great, great way to handle those types of situations.
100%.
So if somebody were to be listening to this podcast and they're like, yeah, I want to start a team. I mean, when I started my team, it was kind of like you, it was just a couple of women, and then it grew into something, you know, bigger. And I went from 4 women to 10. And then I got a dentist that is super awesome that sponsors us. And it just is a really neat thing that gets women involved. And so if someone were to start something, what would be like your pitch? What would be your, I don't know, your description of how to start a team?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the hardest thing about our sport, and not just sport, is cycling. I'm going to target this at discipline.
Okay.
With road cycling and criterium racing, is there's a lot of egos.
Oh, yes. You hear that, Indiana? You hear that? Listen up. There's some egos out there.
And I mean, you know, it goes for the whole country. You know, it's, you have the welcome ones, you have the not super welcome ones, you have the, you know, very transparent ones, and you have the ones that, you know, they say, you know, never let them know your next move. And they certainly don't. My biggest word of advice is talk to team directors. Yes, at first, we're all going to have the same reaction of like, another team, like, seriously.
Right.
But then it goes back to this. Actually, if there's more teams and there's more riders, there's a likelihood that we're actually going to increase in depth as far as the quality of racing that is produced.
Absolutely.
The other thing is, never be afraid to ask questions. Set a list of the values that you hold as a team, and make it very clear. Communicate what those are when you're pulling riders in, whether you're doing it for fun or you're, you know, wanting to take it to the national level. You have to communicate those values and make sure that all of your riders are on the same page.
And expectations.
Yes, that expectations one. I mean, you know, that bit us in the butt many times the first couple of years of the team. I don't know how many times we had, you know, people that were racing 3-4 times in a season. And you're like, dude, we're trying to build something here. Like,
right. You need more.
Some people are racing 28 to 35 races in a season.
28? What?
Yeah. And then there's others that are over here that are like, four to six. And it's like,
so much race.
That's not going to cut it. That's absolutely not going to cut it.
Right.
So be clear about what those expectations are. And then the other thing is, I had somebody reach out to me from, I think it was Louisville, who asked me the same question. And their regards was like sponsorship.
Yeah.
With starting a team. And I said, first off, starting, like, unless you're really trying to jump in deep, the resources is awesome to have on the financial side, but like, don't expect it. But be true to who you are.
Right.
Do not trounce around and, you know, when I talk to this one, I put on this hat and I act like I'm this person. Then you put on a different hat when you go to the other one. like in the long term, that does not work. You right. want to partner with organizations and causes that truly align with your mission. And, you know, I mean, even this year, we found that out with the fact of we, you know, won't call them out for it. But we have a partner that, I mean, truly, when they first partnered with our team, they 100% bought in. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's become very clear we don't align. Mm-hmm. And going into next year, we won't be together anymore. And they've been with the team almost from the very beginning. So
and it's okay.
And it's okay. You'll find someone else. There's always, you know, sure. Yes, the world is actually remarkably small in relativity to what we think. But there are, you know, unless you're really off the deep end, you'll find people and causes that align with sure. what you stand for.
And kind of touching back to what you said at the beginning about specifically to road racing and kind of the roadie side of it and how there's egos and people think that, you know, they're up on, not I want to say this pedestal, but I think your team is a great example of creating that good sportsmanship. Even if you have the elite riders that are winning the big races, they are humble and they are respectful and they're showing, I would say, to the other riders that are still learning on your team and on other teams, this is how you act, you know, at races. Even if you are the big hot shot, right? You're still mm-hmm. being respectful and humble and respect, you know, nice to your competitors.
Always remember, there's somebody faster than you.
Mm-hmm. There is always
somebody faster than you. And, I'll show my motorsports nerd side here.
All right, I'm ready.
One of my favorite lines that was said was by Sebastian Vettel, a Formula One driver. And he won 4 straight championships in a row, world championships with Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
And the last year that he won a championship with them, he's doing burnouts, celebrating that he's won this championship. And he comes over the Red Bull, over mm-hmm. this team. And he says, cherish this moment, cherish these memories. You never know how long they're going to last.
Yeah.
So remember them and like savor them. And I like not word for word what he said, but I remember him saying that and I love it because in reality, the next year he had a teammate come in who beat him mm-hmm. and the car wasn't good enough to win a world championship.
Oh.
And he like never won another world championship again. He wow. changed teams and you know he's since retired, but the him saying that in that moment of like you're on top of the world, you've just sure. won what you wanted to win, like you have no guarantees right. of what tomorrow brings right. what next season brings,
anything can happen.
Cherish those memories. You know, I've got the listeners won't be able to see on my desk.
Well, describe it. What do you got?
Yeah. So I have the Omnium Champions Trophy from Fat and Skinny for the men's overall 1-2. And that was won by the team. And Hogan Stills won the overall this year.
Did you drink your beer?
But that's something that I look at. And, you know, we also have one down at Alley Cat Outfitters. That's the 2018 one from the women yeah. when they won the overall. And we came into Fat and Skinny this year kind of with a vengeance of like,
we're doing this.
We're doing this. We're taking home both of those trophies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our ladies rode amazing. But the reality was at the end of the day, Upland utilized, you know, every one of their riders to the maximum that they could. And fair game to them. Like Katie McDicken got it. And
I saw that finish. It was great.
And, you know, I'm sitting there like, oh, no,
so close. Like,
everything is like, you know, in that moment, it's like, just, you know, take your glass of water, turn it upside down, pour out the water. And it's just like, we just lost. Like, but then it's like the realization a little bit, like literally within about 20 seconds of that happening, it's like, look at the opportunity you have. We have a team that was competitive enough to go up against them, to be in the running for that. And you know what? No matter what we look like next year, we'll come back and we'll, you know, we'll try and make right by that and take a victory from it. But
definitely,
you can't you can't just sulk in the losses. And I mean, you can enjoy the wins, but don't let them go to your head, because you never know.
So speaking of memories, what's your favorite memory this year, or favorite memory in general? Let's just bottom line, favorite memory so far with the team.
Over like the existence of the team?
Sure, yeah. I know there's probably like a million things going through your head right now, and you're like, Mark, why did you ask me such a serious question?
I would say, Margaret, I gotta cheat. Like, I'm not giving you one. One of them would definitely, I will never forget, Friday night of Tulsa Tough, men's 1-2 race, Hogan Sills outsprinting Dante Young of Miami Blazers to win.
Bam, right there.
I was, the team just rode an amazing, amazing race. It was just, I mean, from all the riders that were out there, and like the last lap, Amir Donnell came up, and like Spencer Miller had done an amazing job, and like looked like Hogan was by himself, and Amir, like the massive Israeli man that he is, he like rides to the front and just lays it out. And I can hear like Frankie Andreu in the background, like, this is not your average cycling team. And I'm like, darn straight it's not. Like, and to see that win, I was Lily, my girlfriend, was with us, and she has a video of me just like freaking out the whole last lap, and then just bawling, crying, because it was,
you're a proud papa.
Yeah,
team like dad. If
people ever hear it, like, it almost like brings tears to my eyes just thinking about it right now.
Yeah, and gives you chills.
But if you ever hear it, it's not weird. There's a thing that's gone over the years that they call me Crit Daddy.
Oh, you are? I gotta write that down, Crit Daddy.
I have literally thought of changing the Instagram handle from Sprinter Cams to Crit Daddy.
Please.
I'm like, no, can't give it up. Can't give that
up. That's funny. That's a great memory.
Yeah, an amazing memory. And it was like that realization of like, you've been working for this and putting this together, and part of the team has just like seen this fulfillment at that level, which was amazing.
Sure.
The other one I would have to say,
I know, I'm putting you on the spot, aren't I?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, with our women's team, we've had so many of them where, you know, last year when we won the first night of Fat and Skinny, we went on to win. What was it? Yeah, we won every day of Fat and Skinny last year with our women's team. But it was like a raining nighttime crit, and Hannah Copens came across the line first, and I was the race director of the race. So I was like trying to like, you know, unbiasedly like sit there and watch and just like make sure everything was good. But eventually it was just like, no, I've got to watch this race. And I remember embracing her. Another, like, if you see me, I am not ashamed of it. I am a happy crier. I have cried with this team.
Crit Daddy. I'm gonna change your name on my phone to Crit Daddy now.
Crit Daddy is calling.
And I'll get a picture of you with your sweet shirt on, if our listeners can only see the sweet shirt you're wearing.
Yes. And then and last, I'll just leave it with three. The last one would be at Fat and Skinny last year on Sunday. So one of my least favorite moments of the entire time of running the team. However, probably one of the most special moments was when there was the crash at the end of the women's race. And Gabby Arnold, Jess Hamilton, and Elle Marley all went down. And Gabby was very injured Jess was really torn up with road rash, and Elle was in really bad shape, to the point where they thought that they were going to have to airlift her.
I remember hearing all.
You know, it was one of the hardest and worst crashes that I have ever seen since I've been around cycling. It is the worst crash. In a few moments after that happened, when you have as many people on a team as we have, it's very hard to like keep a track of everyone, right?
Sure.
Not a daycare. We don't make everybody have a friend that they have to hand a hold with. But like the entirety of the team was there together, including the 1-2 guys that were going to be in the next race, and we're fighting for a fourth or a third overall for the Omnium. And we all just came together in a circle, and we said a prayer, and just everyone being together as one was just like, in the moment, I wasn't thinking of that. It was not my intention. But afterwards, just being like, yeah, this is more than a team. You know, when I recruit riders, I tell them, you are coming into a family. This is more than just a team.
Right.
Teams have players that sometimes don't know each other, don't spend time together outside of, you know, the match or the race. This is a family. Our riders spend time with one another. They're in contact with one another. They look forward to seeing each other on race weekends. Sure. It was one of the hardest but most special. Yeah, I think that's honestly my favorite moment. Like my least favorite moment is just how the team came together as one then.
Well, you've heard it from Crit Daddy, everyone. His three memories. No, those are great. I really appreciate you sharing that. I remember a female on my team said to me, the team makes me feel like I belong to something. Mm. And I remember that hitting really hard in my heart, because that is something that I do want to create, even if we aren't an elite, you know, team. But yeah, just having that special moment with that person, knowing that I'm impacting their life and creating something that gives them joy, right?
Yeah.
And cycling is fun, right? Bikes are fun, right?
Yeah,
okay. I've got two more questions, I promise you, and then I'm done. Okay.
All right.
So we kind of talked a little bit, but what's next for the team for 2025? I know you talked about the men's team kind of changing some things around, but in general for Apex Cycling, what do you got on the docket for 2025?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2025 is going to be a really special year. The foundation that's been laid the last 4 years and this season alone has just been on another level. And 2025 is something that, you know, we carry forward. This was our first year. Next year will be our second year as a domestic elite men and women's team.
Mm-hmm.
The plan will be, if the calendar looks similar to what it looked like this year,
right,
that we'll do the Speed Week series. We'll still do 5 of the 8 American Crit Cup series: Tulsa, Gateway, Indianapolis, Chicago. I always forget one. Did I say Indianapolis?
I think so.
Okay, Chicago. Oh, and Wisconsin, Toad. That was a really fun experience this year. First time up there. So those key five races, and then of course show up and show out at our local, you know, at our local regional events. That will be the big focus there, with the potential of throwing in a stage race if possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then the really exciting thing. So Rem Yoder, who ran our 3-4 men's team this past year, he's taking a step away from racing. So
okay.
Just because the sheer number of riders and kind of how cycling works, there's not really a shortage of men in the sport.
Yeah, right. Right. No, I get it.
We'll be taking a step back from an organized team for our men's program there. We will no longer have a men's 3-4-5 program. But what I am really excited about is we will have a women's development program.
That's great.
And we had that a bit this year, but next year is really like a doubling down of like, no, we're going to pull in more riders. We're going to try and double about double the amount of women that we have on the team,
mm-hmm.
and have nice balance of experienced writers and new writers.
Nice.
So that whether it is a an entry category, you know, a 3-4-5 or 4-5 women's race, mm-hmm. or 1-2-3 or 1-2 women's race, mm-hmm. we'll have a rotating cast of writers who really complement one another, lift each other up, but also teach one another. Really can thrive, not just at the local level, but also at the regional level as well.
Sure. No, that's great.
Hopefully national as well. So, yeah.
Ooh, well, I am rooting for you. Again, like I said from the beginning, and why I really wanted to interview you is because, one, I like to talk about people doing awesome things in the state for cycling, but also just like I said, creating that environment that is welcoming, but encouraging, but yet still competitive. And I think it's a great representation of the sport. So I appreciate you doing all that. So how can people get involved, not as a rider, but a sponsor? Like if somebody's like listening to this podcast and they're like, man, I really want to help Dylan out. How does somebody get in touch with you? Obviously, I see an email that is on the website. Do you have a website? Do you have Facebook? Do you have Instagram? How can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one that is easiest to manage and see is always going to be if you shoot us a message over Instagram or Facebook, feel free to do that. And then email info.apexcyclingteam @gmail.com is another one that you can shoot out to. And then my personal Instagram is @SprinterCavs.
Crit daddy at no.
No.
SprinterCavs, CAVS 7X. We definitely welcome any inquiries that we have. Obviously, sponsorship is a huge part of this sport, and especially competing at the top level of the sport. And so, sure. It didn't quite work out this year as far as a website goes, but that's something we're working on. Actually, we have a couple photographers that we've worked with a little bit that we're trying to look at some opportunities where when we're at a race, we're doing we have photos.
Yeah.
But they're going to be of basically the entire time that we're there. So
right.
The plan is to have a website up by next season that racers can go to and basically look for pictures of themselves, but then you'll also be able to continue to see blogs from our riders about how their race weekends went and really give a little bit more of a personal touch to our team, because we want sure. we want people to buy in. And another part
I'm,
of that,
I'm sold. Sign me up. No, I'm kidding. Just kidding. No, I got enough on my plate.
If you want to support the team in a sponsorship capacity, please reach out. But another thing that I'm really looking forward to, we will be doing a fan jersey that will start at the end of this year. So it'll be a little bit of a spinoff, and we've been known, you know, this year the pink is really showing out, but I want to stay true to the origin of the team. So it will probably be, you know, that light blue that we've always had,
okay.
the orange that we used for the development team over the years. And yeah, we'll have a fan jersey that's coming, and every sale of those jerseys through Jackaroo, which is super awesome. Slight plug. Two-week turnaround.
Talk about it. Yep.
From ordering. A little bit of the proceeds when you buy a kit will come back to the team. And that gets utilized for, you know, Gatorade and water, for race registration, for covering for all of the expenses that these riders, that we try to cover for our riders.
A fan girl can get a fan jersey. Do you hear that all? I'm excited about that. So info.apexcyclingteam@gmail.com. Check them out on Facebook and Instagram. Repeat your personal Instagram just to make sure so people don't get confused with Crit Daddy.
Sprinter Cavs, CAVS 7X.
And send them all the great cycling reels like I do to you that are funny and
make
each other laugh. But you heard it from Dylan, the boss man of Apex Cycling. As always, super great to see you, talk with you. I'll edit this and hopefully get it out. We have two that are posting in the next 2 weeks, so you might be like the third or the fourth week. But I'm really, like I said, excited to share this, you know, your information and your story with the state. So keep up the amazing work, and I'm thrilled to see what 2025 brings for you.
Thank you, Margaret. I really appreciate you having me on. And thank you that if you made it this far, apparently, you know, I didn't bore them enough that they made it to the end of the podcast.
So, right. Well, I think the Crit Daddy maybe kept them, you know, reeled in. I don't know. But again, like I said, Apex Cycling here. We've got Dylan Curtis, and I'll get it edited and hopefully post it soon. So I hope you have a great evening and take care. All right. I'm going to stop it.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.